He literally has a business.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the Legacy Finance Committee meeting to order. We have a quorum, so we're open for business. And Vice Chair Hussein, would you be willing to move the minutes for the previous meeting on February 21st?
Yes, I move, Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Any questions in regards to the minutes? Seeing none, thank goodness. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? We have the minutes approved. Thank you, Representative Hussein. So today we started with Lessard Sams, and we went to Clean Water. Now we're moving on to Parks and Trails section of the amendment, of the legacy amendment. And so we've invited the three partners. So we have Greater Minnesota today, the DNR, and the folks from the Met Council, and they've all it's kind of neat, they're working together and going to present and tell us about what's happened in the past and then what they're planning in the future, maybe, and some of the successes and maybe even failures, which is fine, but I think it's definitely immensely popular, the parks and trail system throughout Minnesota, and I really believe the legacy dollars continue to make it much better. So I think starting off, we're starting, do you have Ms. Barajas?
Yes. Sorry. That's okay, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, and go ahead when you're ready, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Good morning. I'm Lisa Barajas. I'm the executive director of the Community Development Division at the Metropolitan Council and the Regional Parks. Part of that work is part of my division's work, which I'm always eternally grateful. It's one of my favorite things to do at the council. And on behalf of the council and our 10 regional park implementing agencies, really thank you for the opportunity to present this overview of the Parks and Trails Legacy Fund. I'm here today with two of my colleagues, Laura Preuss with the DNR State Parks and Trails, and Renee Mattson, Executive Director of the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission. We are all committed to advancing the vision of the 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan, which is to connect everyone to our world-class system of regional and statewide parks and trails in Minnesota, and together we make up the state and regional parks system of Minnesota. Minnesota's 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan guides the overall priorities for the fund. This plan was developed based on extensive public engagement, including thousands of youth and diverse participants. It guides all three partner agencies and provides a consistent vision across the state. And the vision for the 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan is to provide a seamless, accessible, and welcoming system of parks and trails for all Minnesotans. Legacy funds are a game changer for DNR, Met Council, and Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails. These funds allow partners to accelerate work in critical areas and fill important gaps. The 25-year plan is organized around four pillars or strategic priorities. The first being connecting people in the outdoors, so providing welcoming environments with programs and special events to attract first-time visitors to the parks and trails. Adapting to Minnesota's changing demographics, which suggests a more diverse and an older population. The second pillar is acquiring land and creating opportunities, so making strategic acquisitions of parks and trails, including high-priority trail connections that fill critical gaps, focusing on near-home convenient opportunities in areas projected to grow most rapidly, near regional centers, and in areas of change or shortage. Taking care of what we have, also incredibly important. So with these funds, accelerating rehabilitation of aging park and trail infrastructure to ensure high quality experiences to meet today's needs for all people, preserving existing high quality natural resources and restoring those that have been degraded, placing a priority on controlling the spread of invasive species. And then finally and importantly, coordinating among partners by providing interested users the ability to find what they want easily and establishing a statewide advisory committee to help foster a network of parks and trails with seamless user experience. So I'll move on to talk about the regional parks and trail system and then pass off to my partners here to speak about each of their areas as well. As I mentioned earlier, it's my pleasure to speak on behalf of our 10 regional parks implementing agencies and really have this opportunity to be in front of you today to talk about the efforts that we are now 15 years into in the Parks and Trails Legacy Fund implementation. So I'll share a little bit about the critical impact this fund is having on the metro region. Just a little bit of background before we go there. The metro region is a 7-county area, and on the map you can see illustrated the jurisdictions of our 10 regional parks implementing agencies along with those agencies listed along the side. The council provides planning support, research, and funding to the 10 agency partners, and it's these 10 partners that own and operate the system. Our metro regional park system is nationally renowned, and many people think of our system as the state parks of the metro region. Our system is made up of 44 regional parks, 12 park reserves, 8 special recreation features like the Minnesota Zoo. I'm sorry, not Minnesota Zoo, Como Zoo. I was just talking about the Minnesota Zoo earlier before we started, Como Zoo. And 55 regional trails with 415 miles of riding and walking opportunities. In total, the Metro Regional Parks system is almost 55,000 acres of parkland open to all Minnesotans. The Parks and Trail Legacy Fund helps make the regional park system a true gateway to all of Minnesota's amazing outdoor opportunities, including the state parks and trail system, which has a number of trails that connect into the system and to some of our state regional parks as well, as well as the greater Minnesota regional system. So today I'll just share a few updates of some of the exciting things that have happened throughout this season. If you haven't heard, this past month the Cross Country Ski World Cup came to Minneapolis at Theodore Worth Regional Park, and we were incredibly blessed with the 6 inches of snowfall that happened just ahead of that. I think it was a little dicey, including I think all fans and skiers alike were a little nervous, like, is this going to happen? Please let this happen. But this world-class event was hosted by the Lopet Foundation in partnership with the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. In the build-up to the event, organizers were clearly scrambling to ensure that we had enough snow. Three Rivers Park District, Ramsey County, and others shared their snow-making equipment with race organizers to ensure that we could actually pull off this race. And it was just an amazing event. If you didn't get an opportunity to get out and see it, or even see it, it was streaming online as well. Just phenomenal. The skiers, the state, the professional skiers all remarked on just how amazing the crowd was. Being on a loop, they got to hear it all the time. It was incredibly loud if you were there because everyone was cheering, especially for our hometown favorites like Jessie Diggins, who got to ski in front of her, you know, her hometown and be cheered on. So we were really, with the partnership with our agencies, really helped carry this off. I don't think that we could have done it without them. And, excuse me, the success of this event is an exemplar of what partnership across the region can do when Mother Nature doesn't look like it's going to deliver. And I would say similarly, if our regional parks agencies weren't making snow, I don't think we would have had a high school Nordic ski season this year either. I think every high school skier in the state of Minnesota was skiing on the snow-making trails in our regional park system. I know every time I went to pick up my kids, they're like, wow, this place is packed. There were buses from all over, even outside of the metro area, bringing kids in to ski on weekdays, too. So just an amazing opportunity that even in hard years like this year for snow, that our regional parks are able to provide opportunities that we wouldn't otherwise have. The Parks and Trails Legacy Fund played an important role in shaping and updating Theodore Worth Regional Park into what it is today. While the trailhead building was fully funded with private dollars, the Parks and Trail Legacy Fund helped prepare the site and winter activities throughout the park, along with numerous support improvements and amenities such as parking and access. As with many big projects, there was a wide mix of funding in addition to Legacy, including Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund funding, Regional Parks Bond funds, outside philanthropy, and Minneapolis Park and Rec Board funding as well. The Parks and Trails Legacy Fund played a vital role in bringing snowmaking to the east side of our region as well, providing $1.65 million to create the Battle Creek Winter Recreation and Ramsey Recreation Area in Ramsey County. If you haven't been out here, it is fabulous in the winter. It's also fabulous in the summertime. and provide some really challenging Norikski hills if you haven't tried them. It's a great opportunity. But as I said earlier, it takes a mix of funding to bring a project of this scale into being. With an additional $1.8 million in state funds, $750,000 in regional funds, and $2.4 million in Ramsey County funds. Ramsey County prioritizes access to communities that are new to winter recreation. They have fostered a close working relationship with Battle Creek Elementary School to provide free access to cross-country skiing for a third consecutive year now. All St. Paul High School students also ski for free at their facilities. And Harding and Johnson High School have established winter cross-country ski programs now that they have this access. Additionally, Ramsey County hosts free skiing and kick sledding try-it days, and there are free to learn ski programs each Thursday evening in January and early February. They have big plans to continue to expand these efforts to make the winter recreation area more equitable and accessible and relevant to the broader community. The Parks and Trails Legacy Fund plays a major role developing the growing parts of the metropolitan region, including Carver County's regional system. In February, the Carver County Board of Commissioners held a ribbon-cutting ceremony to celebrate the completion of Paradise Commons, which you see on the screen here, at Lake Waconia Regional Park. Located at Lake Waconia Regional Park, this new facility provides state-of-the-art, fully accessible experience, including classrooms, event space, restrooms, rental concessions, as well as enhanced lakeshore access, including beach and picnic areas, trails, and other site amenities. It also makes a stronger connection to the unique Coney Island of the West, which was also made possible by the Legacy Fund. This momentous event celebrates the impact that the Parks and Trails Legacy Fund is having on the younger parks and trails in our regional system as well. Dakota County Parks invests legacy funding to partner with a variety of schools, nonprofits, and community groups to reach communities that are underrepresented in regional parks and trails. All outreach events leverage legacy funds to offer free of charge opportunities to participants. Winter activities include cross-country skiing, kick sledding, ice fishing, snowshoeing, sledding, and winter nature walks. So you don't have to be all that coordinated. You can just walk as well. These programs provide equipment, including winter gear such as snow pants, hats, gloves, and coats, all free of charge. One other exciting Dakota County legacy investment is that they recently hired a part-time Indigenous liaison to help them with relationship building with tribal communities in the area as well. Three Rivers Park District's vision for their system is that every person can connect with nature every day. And Three Rivers Recreation Pass Plus program provides opportunities for families experiencing financial difficulty to enjoy the Three Rivers Park system in ways that might not otherwise be possible. Through the program, participants receive unlimited free equipment rentals along with free annual recreation passes. From hiking through the woods, learning about wildlife, skiing through a winter wonderland, and more, there's adventure for everyone. And St. Paul's BIPOC Outdoors program connects Black, Indigenous, and persons of color folks in the Twin Cities to recreational activities in our regional and local parks and trails. Opportunities include things like teaching participants how to do the particular skill or activity on their own and making equipment available for folks who have participated in programming to use on their own time, providing snow pans for skiing and snowboarding so participants can stay warm during and dry during lessons, because I don't know about you, but I still fall down and I'm out there skiing all the time. It's important to stay dry. Loaning out fishing rods and waders to those who have attended fly fishing with them and who want to go back out on their own. There's a current effort to expand programming through volunteer programs to train BIPOC folks to become outdoor leaders. St. Paul was not able to share, or I was not able to share examples of all the great work of all our 10 regional parks implementing agencies, but I wouldn't give you an overview or a flavor of how Parks and Trails Legacy Funding has really impacted, especially that connecting people to the outdoors and really thinking about doing that in all seasons, not just in the warmer months. Just one other example I wanted to share is that Scott County provides free nature-based opportunities, promoting mental and social health to prioritize communities in coordination with partner organizations. So thank you for listening to all the range of efforts in the Metropolitan Regional Park System and all the efforts our implementing agencies are doing to expand outdoor opportunities for all. The Parks and Trails Legacy Fund is critical in supplementing our funds to make a big difference and an even bigger difference across the region. So now I will pass over to Laura with DNR Parks and Trails, who will share about their legacy efforts.
Thank you, Ms. Barajas. So, Ms. Price?
Yes.
Yes, thank you. Welcome, and thank you for coming.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all. Before we get going, I'd want to thank all of you for bringing these pins for members and staff, I hope. Okay, good. Thank you very much. It was very kind. Go ahead. Sorry, I interrupted.
Not at all, Mr. Chair. Members, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here. My name is Laura Preuss. I'm a statewide manager with DNR's Parks and Trails system. It's my great pleasure to be here with Met Council and Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission to share this presentation about the great work that Legacy is doing. I'd like to begin by introducing a little bit about our statewide system. As you can see, we have a number of areas that we promote and support throughout the entire state of Minnesota. This includes a broad system of state parks and recreation areas, as well as forest recreation areas. These include more than 5,000 camping and lodging units, day use areas, and a variety of opportunities. I'd also like to emphasize the 240,000 acres of land that DNR manages as part of the state system. That's really important for the natural and cultural resources in our state. Many of our prized places are part of the state parks and trails system. We also have a broad trails network, which includes state trails, a variety of kinds of trails, the cross country, horseback riding, also grant and aid for local communities. And finally, we support a broad water recreation system with public water access and more. But today we're really focusing in on the Parks and Trails Legacy Fund, where we focus our efforts around the state parks and recreation areas, as well as our state trail system. This is a broad system since 1891 with our first park that's been growing since then. We also see a growth in visitation that we've had over the years. We've recently marked 12 million visitors within our state park system. So it's a broad and vast system, and Legacy has really been a game changer for us in terms of the ability to support and advance that system for the benefit of the people of Minnesota. You'll also notice that each of our systems is a little different in terms of how they're set up and how they're run, and we view that as being complementary and part of the seamless system that we all talk about. This is a map simply to demonstrate that the work that happens for Legacy is around the state of Minnesota, serving all Minnesotans. This map was created as part of a legislative request to say a little bit about where our projects are happening in terms of legislative districts. And so you received a handout that provides the information and gives a flavor of the types of projects happening within this biennium. So each biennium, we have a set of projects that we're working through, and this is an example from this biennium. You can see the statewide nature. We distribute through our four regions, including 10 districts and 14 areas around the state of Minnesota. And in all of these areas, we're focusing on those four pillars that Lisa described related to our Parks and Trails Legacy Plan. So this is about 30 different projects throughout the state. I'd like to walk through now each of the pillars of the 25-year legacy plan and share some fun stories and some great examples of the work that we do. In this first part around connecting people to the outdoors, this is really an important part of our work. DNR has about 20% of our funding towards various types of programs and things that help us connect people to the outdoors. The ICANN program really is fundamentally able to have happened because of Legacy. And it's an extremely popular program for us. It reaches out to a variety of new audiences and really provides a friendly and easy way to get connected to the outdoors via camping, fishing, mountain biking, paddling, archery. So if people haven't had the opportunities to maybe get exposed to some of this growing up, these are ways to build skills. They're skill building programs that bring people in, provide the equipment, provide friendly instruction, give an opportunity to get connected, which then grows the next opportunity to connect to nature and the outdoors. They really reduce barriers, improve access, and welcome everyone. And it's important to say, too, how popular they are with a wide variety of demographics, even beyond what we typically see in our state park system. About last year, 100% of the overnight ICANN camp programs were filled, and across all programs, 90% of them are filled. And again, these provide low-cost ways to enter into programs. Another great thing to share about related to connecting people to the outdoors is the Library Pass program. And we've spoken with that before when we were trying this as a pilot. And we want to let you know that we're continuing this because we've had such great success with this Library Pass program. This allows people to check out a state park permit for free and go try something that they might not normally have done. In the first year, we had 1,900 state park passes were checked out from 71 libraries, and many of these libraries were located in lower income parts of the state. 95 to 98% said that they'd use the library pass again and then visit a state park again. And 49% of the pass users had an annual household income under about $50,000. So we're really trying to broaden the reach of opportunities by providing an easy way for someone to check out that pass and go try a park. Parks and Trails legacy dollars are going to help us continue that. We're going to add 40 to 50 new passes and continue this program. The second one on the slide on the right side is our Junior Ranger program. And this is just one example. We do a lot of interpretive work that we wouldn't be able to do without the legacy dollars. We're really trying to look at signage, interpretation, wayfinding. But here's an example of one program that we've updated. We used to have a junior naturalist program that was like 30 years old with really old materials. And now we have a new junior ranger program with a new booklet. Just in the few months that it started, we've passed out more than 2,000. 500 patches were earned by kids engaging in activities. And one of the aspects of this new booklet was it allowed to use artwork that more broadly represented the Minnesota that we are and welcomed kids into new activities. So it's been very popular. I know my twins really enjoy these kind of activities because it just gives a little catalyst into connecting to nature, and you never know what's going to come next. It also helps people imagine being a ranger in a system. And so for kids to be able to see themselves as part of that next generation of people who might come in to help manage our parks and trails. Next set of slides are around another pillar of our legacy plan related to taking care of what we have. As we previously mentioned, we have a pretty old system. A lot of it was built 60 to 90 years ago or even older. And so taking care of what we have is a really critical part of what legacy allows us to do. About 60% of our funding in a biennium typically goes towards this. This example just demonstrates some of the basic types of work that we try to do with legacy to ensure safety and great opportunities. This picture shows the Gateway State Trail Westminster Street Bridge that was completed in October of 2023. The original bridge on the left side, as you can see, was built in 1919, didn't have a very high clearance, was on the railroad. Minnesota has done a great job taking our old railroads and turning them into state trails, but the infrastructure wasn't always there to help us meet all of our needs. So legacy allowed us to build a new bridge on that part. And as you can see on the right side, it's safe for the bikers, also for the road around, and for the neighbors around it, it's a safe and pleasing bridge. And it's also important to note that we're complementing funds. One of the things that we heard when we did the 25-year legacy plan was that Minnesotans wanted us to optimize the variety of uses of funds. Legacy was intended to supplement, not replace, but it was also intended to complement the range of opportunities out there. So here's an example where we had some natural asset preservation funds. We also had legacy funds. We were able to leverage a federal grant and put those things together to make these types of things possible. And we aim to do 4 to 6 of these state trail bridge improvements a year. Then moving through here, another big area for taking care of what we have is some of the basics around, these are shower buildings. We do a state trail visitor survey, state trail and state park visitor survey that lets us know what people want. We know they want to get out hiking. They want to get out in the opportunities. But it's critical to have safe, clean, and accessible bathrooms. And so here's a couple of examples of some shower buildings that were rehabilitated. In Maplewood, we had one that was really in very poor condition. We were able to upgrade this to meet accessibility needs, to have independent bathrooms, make it a much more safe and welcoming place, both for campers and for bicyclists visiting. Also in Fort Ridgely, you'll see an example again of an old and outdated bathroom that is now accessible and includes energy efficiency. So these are the types of things that we try to do with Legacy. Another fun example here has to do with, again, I mentioned these older system. The State Park Camp here was built between 1911 and 1925. And you can see in these old camps that were built in that era of Conservation Corps more, we really had patchwork of rehab that's been done over the years, inadequate, patchy, and now we've finally been able to use Legacy to really do a major rehabilitation project to make these be able to continue in our system and be available for people to enjoy. And then last example on the pillars is around acquiring land and creating new opportunities. So we have a vast system to rehabilitate and keep going. We also need to create some new opportunities. For example, it may be trail connections. For example, we heard about connections with each of our trail systems. Sometimes we're able to purchase land that allows us to make those connections. This is an example from the Casey Jones State Trail between Pipestone and Woodstock that was completed in fall of this last year. I'd mentioned previously that we have far more state trails that are designated than we've had the opportunity to develop. This was one example of a system that had been designated but for many years weren't able to fund. Legacy allowed us to design and construct the segment and make that possible. We aim to do about 15 to 20 miles every biennium of some of these state trail advancements. Along with the natural resource management work that we do, Legacy really has been, as Lisa mentioned, a game changer for us, providing these easy entry opportunities, but also managing and maintaining the excellent system that Minnesota has for our state parks and trail system. So with that, I'll say thank you very much, and I'd like to pass it to Renee for the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission. Thank you.
Thanks, Laura.
Thank you very much. Ms. Madsen, welcome.
Thank you.
Go ahead,
nice
when
to
you're
be here.
Please.
And of course, we can take questions too at any point. So if you wrap up, we're definitely available.
I think we'll take questions at the end.
Okay. So again, Renee Madsen, Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission. In front of you is our 2023 legacy planning report for 2023. This outlines what work has been done in the past year. So if you have questions specifically about what's designated in a particular area, what's designation eligible and where funding's gone, this report outlines all of that for you. So a lot of what I'm referring to is projects that have been taking place, either started or completed in 2023. Real quickly, we have six districts across the 80 counties of Greater Minnesota that aren't the seven county metropolitan area. There are 13 commissioners that are appointed by the governor. There are two in each district, and then one is an at-large commissioner. Currently, as of 12/31/23, we have 77 facilities throughout the state. Of those, 35 are natural resource-based parks. Those are the larger acreage parks. 26 are regional trails, and then 16 are special features. So that can be things like a ski area, a climbing area in Sandstone, which has a beautiful ice climbing area there. And then there are 19 designation eligible facilities. And what that means is in our process, the first step is to complete an application for designation. And there we sort out those facilities that truly are regional in scope, or those that need a little bit more work on their application to become regional, and in some cases, those that just aren't going to meet those requirements. So these 19 designation eligible facilities have ranked high, and we're simply waiting for a master plan to be completed so that we can review the facilities from there. In 2023, we had a lot of great projects that were completed that had started sometimes earlier, and one of the projects that came before us was a connecting people with the outdoors opportunity to provide some track wheelchairs to our parks. And that is certainly, as we all get older, and I'm knocked down by my dog more and more often, and I think about falling and breaking a hip, even at my young age. The accessibility is important on just all scopes. So we wanted to make track wheelchairs available to our designated facilities. So we opened up a special Connecting People with the Outdoors grant opportunity so that they could still apply for those projects that repaired an older facility or built something new, but also this was a separate grant opportunity. And we had It was opened up to all of our facilities. Three of them applied for grants. We had enough funding to do one track wheelchair, but because it was too hard to just choose one of those, the commissioners made the decision to take our operating funds and pay for the other two wheelchairs so that we could actually award wheelchairs to all of the facilities that did apply. What we're doing with that is calling it somewhat of a test case, too, because all of those wheelchairs came with a caveat that if another facility wanted to try that, see how it worked in their facility and apply for funds in the future, we had to make those chairs available. So hopefully this is a program that continues to grow because the funds are available. It didn't necessarily have a match component. We wanted to just make this chair available, whether or not you had the funds in your budget to do that. And the three chairs that are out there now are being very well used, as you can see from the photo on the left. You see the logo on the photo in the middle, that's Duluth's chair. And then a better look at just what that chair looks like. So that was a lot of fun. So I'm going to highlight one project in each of our six districts. Sandstone Robinson Quarry Park, which I just referred to, has this amazing ice climbing facility. It's not the kind of thing I'm ever going to try. I'm scared looking up at the walls before they have ice on them, much less deciding this looks like a really fun thing to do. But it is amazingly popular. And when you look at magazines or different online articles that have an ice climbing wall, very frequently, this is one of the places that it's filmed. So it's been very popular. What you see is an older photo. Obviously, this was happening during COVID because people are still wearing masks, but it's a great facility, and we've been able to help them with four different grants to develop this. And one of the important things that they were able to do with one of the first grants was address some water runoff issues from the roadway leading into the park and also the parking areas that were running into the Kettle River. So we like to start with something, a project in the beginning that's going to address infrastructure, either improvements to it for infrastructure that doesn't exist yet, or improvements like stopping runoff into the river. So you see a beautiful stairway here that's built for access. They also have added some kayak railings, better access to the river generally, some beautiful stone seating areas that harken back to when this was a quarry, as well as building some new campsites and changing some trails. So this is a great example of one of those small communities that doesn't have a lot of funds. They came to us with a very small match. But the beauty of the way we can award funds is there is not a match component required. You score and you get points if you do have a match, but that's not what it's all about. It's helping these communities that don't have the big budgets able to succeed. So they've done a great job there. If you're driving, you know, up on 35, scoot in to take a look at the park. It's just right off the road, and it's really beautiful and well worth seeing. So we'll be coming to you with more pictures about this in the future. The Gull Lake Trail is a great example of communities coming together and coordinating among partners. This project's been ongoing for a number of years because trails are just inherently difficult to build. They take time and they're very expensive. But Nisswa Lake City and Fairview Township came together to create a 21-mile trail around Gull Lake. And it's just about at the end. We just awarded one of the last grants to Fairview and Nisswa to finish their sections, and Lake City will be coming in with another grant, I'm sure, this year. Our new application process gets underway April 1, so they can finish their section as well. But it is well ridden. It's been ongoing for a number of years. Every time I'm there, there's people out on the trails on bikes, strollers, walking. It's been a great resource for visitors to the community, but also residents. If you're familiar with that area, it's difficult to walk on the shoulder with cars whizzing past. So this has been a great opportunity for them to enhance the visitors' experience as well as their own residents. Kensington Runestone Park in Douglas County is just a great facility. This is such an interesting story because the runestone was found there in 1898 at the farmstead of Olaf Oman. And when they were digging up a tree, doing some work in a field, the tree knocked over. And you see the picture on the left. That's a new grant that was just given to them for some access to enhance the access to the runestone story. There was a wood chip trail there, and this is a nice concrete pad. They did three different interpretive sculptures, and this is the first one that talks about Olaf and his sons with the tree that turned up this runestone underneath it. That's been dated to 1362, and it has runic symbols on it. And of course, it's been a raging debate in Douglas County for many years. But Douglas County embraced this and built, first of all, this beautiful visitor center on the top right that is well used with groups using the facility year-round. There's beautiful gardens around there and going out from there to enjoy the park. But they've also done some other access around describing more and talking about the runestone that's there. There's also a small interpretive center in this visitor center. And it's a really fascinating aspect of this park and the reason the park exists. So Douglas County put a lot of effort behind it, and we were happy to be able to award the funds for the visitor center and also this great access point to talk about the runestone, controversial though it may be. Sherburne County has one of our newest parks. This is a gorgeous 430-acre parcel on Big Elk Lake Park. And the county, the name of the park now, it started off being Big Elk Lake County Park, but recognizing the amazing historical and cultural sensitivity and history in this area, the county really has worked hard with tribal governments to appreciate the space and actually changed their master plan and the ideas that they had for the park based on the input that they had and the cultural sensitivity of the site. The new name of the park now, it was just recently renamed, I think in the fall, is Two Inlets of Bidet Hihaka Amash Kuz Saga Igans Regional Park. And that means the two inlets are the two rivers that run into the park, Lily Creek and then the Elk River into the park. And then in Dakota, in Ojibwe, that's Big Elk Lake Park. So it's a wonderful work that the county's done to really embrace the culture and change what they thought was going to be the focal aspect of the park, which was a lot more activities there. And now it's changing more into a much more thoughtful way to use that space. One of the first projects, to get this land was significant, and a lot of partners came together. And happily, Greater Minnesota was able to help with the acquisition, along with the DNR grant and Trust for Public Lands. In the second round, we were able to give them a grant to get things started. So it's changing the access road coming in so the park unveils itself a little bit more interesting rather than just a straight road in. But one of the first elements is going to be a foraging forest. And they have a wonderful programming planned around getting kids and families out there to understand the foraging forest and really embrace this beautiful farmland. So it's going to be a lot of fun to see this as it develops over the next many years. So you'll be hearing about this quite a lot more from us as things continue to evolve there. But it's just an amazing piece of property. The Laverne Loop and Blue Mounds Trail is a great example of connecting within our system. So Blue Mounds State Park is not far from Laverne, and the Laverne Loop connects to the Blue Mounds Trail there. It's a great 10.25 trail around the city of Laverne that has these wonderful connections to other trails. But as we always talk about, often a park or trail development does spur economic activity. And Laverne's a beautiful community, and I think sometimes underappreciated, but it's a gorgeous community and has a lot going on. And when they started building this trail system around town, different things changed. An old Casey's gas station was purchased by the city and turned into this beautiful trailhead building that not only has bike repair there, but it's a little community gathering center as well. So it's right as you come into town, and other opportunities around the trail have been spurred because of the new connections. So again, something we don't often think about, but is certainly true, that recreation, outdoor recreation, and these legacy grants can spur economic activity in communities across the state. And finally, Rochester Cascade Lake Park. So what you see on the left-hand side, there's not a lot of people in the park. Don't be surprised that this is a park and nobody's going there. This was taken as a drone shot right before the grand opening last summer. You'll see some people in the park now. Cascade Lake is, oh, I have to get my size here. It's 225 acres, and it's an urban park right in the center of Rochester. It's an old sand quarry operation. So as the sand mining was winding down, the city made an agreement, and they've been purchasing this land and turning it into a park over several years. And again, there's DNR grant dollars in part of this park as well. Fishing Pier stands out to me, probably some others. what you see for the buildings in the background is a senior center, senior living center. They're active, but you see them in the park all the time with these little kids, and it's a great blending of the two cultures. You got these little kids playing and having fun, and these older folks just enjoying being there with the kids. So one of the last aspects is this park has been built out. There's a beach there and trails and a lot of other really fun things, a different play area entirely. But this new play area is intended for younger kids from 2 to about 12. And there are some wonderful roll-on accessible elements within the park. For instance, a merry-go-round that a child in a wheelchair can easily access because it's at zero, it's right at ground level. So some of these pictures are mine. They're not great coming from the grand opening, but as soon as they opened this aspect of the park, it was crawling with little kids, and it was so fun to see. So it's a wonderful example of taking this kind of urban wasteland within the middle of a city and turning it into this really well-loved and used park. And they have also really leveraged dollars. There are bonding dollars in this, have paid for an amphitheater. There's a bridge across the parking lot that the senior development actually paid for to make it easier for their residents to get over there. So it's a great facility in the center of Rochester and really complements their system in many ways. And just a few things, because there were so many things going on, I thought I'd throw in a few more slides at the very end. The top left is the new pavilion at Lake Bilsby Park in Goodhue County. And what's really cool about this is it connects actually with the Dakota County Bilsby Park on the other side of the lake. But what you see in this picture, you see the red painting on the ceiling of the pavilion. What the architect did was, it's the Cannon River, so it's showing the Cannon River as it winds through the area, and Lake Bilsby, and then the Cannon River as it departs there. So it's educational, too, as you look up. At first, it doesn't really unfold itself to you as, what's this? Was this a bad paint job? And then you realize, no, it's actually geographically accurate, the way that the river and the lake fit together. So it's a neat park that complements two ends of our system. Below that is the new nature center at Olmsted County's Oxbow Park and Zolman Zoo. Their new nature center was required because the popularity of the programming in the old nature center just exploded. They could not keep up with it. There was so much interest and so much activity. So this is a happy example of, we've blown out, we can't take any more people. Olmsted County put a lot of resources into it, and happily they were able to leverage that with a legacy grant to build this beautiful building. The middle photo is from a grand opening at Lake Brophy Park, also in Douglas County. That's my colleague, Joe Chepesky, who's our system plan coordinator, and a little boy playing our game to win some candy. It was about 1,000,000 degrees in the sun that day, and no matter what we did, the candy turned into lots of chocolate blobs, but everybody had fun. And then finally, the photo on the right is a project that we just completed last May, and that's our mountain bike trail development guide. It's the first time a guide's been updated for mountain bike trail guidelines since 2017. So it's a project we'd been working on for a number of years. We leveraged our resources with IMBA and Rock Solid Trail Contracting to produce this guide that's available to all Minnesotans at no charge. It's also available on our website, and it was such a popular resource that Velo Quebec contacted us and asked if they could translate it into French for their mountain bike communities. So we said, of course, yes, by all means. So that's one of the other projects that we unveiled this year. And with that, we thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mattson, and thank you all. Great presentation. It's just so important what our parks do all over the state. Just happened to be on Twitter or X the other day, and it had like the most visited site, and the Mall of America was, I think, top of the country. But then when you look at like the Minneapolis system, the Met Council and the use with 65 million, just that, and then if we had all these other numbers, I mean, it's amazing the visits that are going on in our parks. So we're way past Disneyland and Mall of America even. So anyways, we have some member questions. Thank you. And Representative Backer.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Just a couple, and I don't expect you to know this right now. Maybe I would appreciate you sharing us the information. You talked about quite a few facilities, which is great to see the upgrade at the Maplewood State Park, the shower, the Fort Riley, and other. It would. How would we get the? How much they cost to update those? And I'm not just referring to those, but you. We look like we have invested into a lot of different facilities, from Douglas County up to Brainerd area and stuff. It would be nice to know what those facilities cost. Was it a 100% from the legacy? I suspect not, that there was some matching grants and stuff. So I don't expect you to know that on your head, but I would appreciate an email on that, just because we have people, I have constituents who say, what do you use legacy? You know, because in my area, we don't like a land acquisition of for more public land purchasing. So it'd be really helpful for myself. So that's my first point of information. And then my last point of information, I love the wheelchair idea, but actually with it being moved from place to place, it sounds like who owns it and who takes care of the maintenance? Because obviously if they don't work, they're not going to provide much recreational. So, you know, it's connecting people, but right now who owns those? And, you know, they're going to be moved to different facilities from what I read on the write-up. Could you help me out with that? Thank you.
Thank you.
So those are my 2 points.
Ms. Mattson, and I think the DNR uses a lot of the ATV or the mobile wheelchairs as well. So, but Ms. Mattson, I think this was for you.
Thank you, Chair Lilly, Representative Backer. It's a great question. It's actually a limited number of days they can be borrowed, but they have to make them available. They have to be transported in an enclosed vehicle. Many of our facilities have that. The facility that is awarded the grant had to prove to us or demonstrate that they can maintain it and that they have enclosed storage for it and that they would keep it in good working order for a length of, I think we had 8 to 10 years.
Follow-up?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so, yeah, thank you. It'd be nice to also in that email include where, which facility has it and those criterias and how they did that, because it is a great idea. I really like that. At the same time, it's only as good as if they can be used. Because I would hate a family go and see it and they don't work. Thank you. Appreciate it. And then the first list of the cost of those other things would be very helpful. What we've invested into them, because people like nice facilities. Thank you.
So I think Ms. Price has maybe a comment, and I think the DNR's had maybe sure. A greater experience with the dependability of these things. So yeah, maybe that's what you're – go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. Yes, also great question. The same things that we were wondering about as we were entertaining those ideas of are these going to work and be able to maintain. And I simply wanted to share that we did a pilot with them to get at those kinds of questions. And understood that they were able to be working well in our system and were very popular and used, and along with the necessary storage, transportation, training, and maintenance, they were very popular, and so we did have that success with them after a pilot evaluation. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Chair Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers, you know, I think appreciate you having this presentation today in Capital Investment Committee. We're going to hear from the DNR and the Met Council too. And as we went through this, you know, it seems like a lot of the work that's being done with Legacy Dollar are, you know, replicating some of the works that we're doing in capital investment. And so I think, you know, just wanted to talk specifically, you know, you mentioned, I think this is the DNR on page 22, funding for the Casey Jones State Trail. And last year in the bonding bill, we also appropriated $1.32 million in there. And so can you talk about, you know, how much are you putting into Casey Jones, plus how much have we appropriated from capital investment, and what is the total cost, and are the locals actually putting in dollars into this trail too?
Ms. Price.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the question. As to the very specific numbers related to Casey Jones, I'll have to get those exact numbers back to you. But I would like to address the question overall related to the idea that these are similar to some of the capital investments. Indeed, that is the case. And part of what I'd like to emphasize in my response is we have a capital asset needs report. Given the extent of our system and the extent of the capital backlog, the needs are greater than can be fulfilled by bonding or legacy. And so one of the things we do, as we heard in that 25-year legacy plan to try to complement funding, is we have a set of projects that are ready that we work with communities on to understand and determine the needs. And then we try to really leverage those funds and work together to achieve the development projects or the rehab projects. And so there are instances where we will have some natural asset preservation funds or capital bonding requests. Other instances where we will also use legacy to augment and get that extra piece that we might not have been able to be done. For example, adding some important elements related to accessibility or you know, other energy efficiency or types of things that take it from maybe a basic, just bare bones type of project to actually something that is really meaningful for the community because we're able to leverage those funds. Some projects are fully bonded, others are legacy, and we really think carefully about how to meet the needs of our system with the funding we have available to us, given limited general fund dollars. But I'd be happy to follow up with Casey Jones' information.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Early.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that, you know, when we see this on your planning sheet, you know, just going down to the State Trail Development Project, you list out Gitche-Gami State Trail. And this is to develop a section of the Gitche-Gami State Trail from Two Harbors to Flood Bay State Wayside. And in the bonding bill, we also appropriated $44 million to that specific project. And so, Mr. Chair, I'm bringing this up because I think there's a lot of overlap. And when we think about the different competing projects out there, whether that's in legacy or capital investment, where we have over $4.7 billion in requests for state government and $2.9 for local government, that are we actually leveraging the dollars like what we're hearing, or are we, you know, supplementing each other and not having a local contribution to those projects? And so I just wanted to bring this forth. And, you know, this is not just for the DNR, but, you know, I think I heard from the colleagues from Greater Minnesota with the Rochester project, where they're saying that we're leveraging bonding dollars. And I would like to make it clear as chair that I don't believe that legacy dollars should be leveraging bonding dollars. We should be having non-state sources to match the dollars that we are putting through in capital investment. And I think we could have further conversation around this, you know, later this afternoon in capital investment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Ms. Price, do you have a comment? No? Okay, good. So Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair, and to our testifiers, thank you so much for being here and for this presentation. I have two areas of inquiry. The first is, you know, I caught the snowmaking piece of the budget that you talked about and how, you know, basically we were just very lucky that it happened to snow the one time it snowed basically this year. So I'm just, what that makes me wonder is how are you thinking about climate change, right? How are the monies that are going in to do the work that Legacy is doing? Clearly we will be having to make more snow because the winters are warming, snowfall is decreasing. Like, are we, I would love to just hear what space that's occupying, if it does, or if that's a separate sort of entire space that, that the work you're doing is living.
So maybe we could hear from all three of you. Ms. Barajas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. That's an excellent question. And you might remember last year the legislature appropriated to the Metropolitan Regional Parks and Trails System, I think roughly $16 million for modern, no, I might be wrong on the number, but $11 million for modernization projects, which are meant to be in response to the impacts that we're seeing in climate change, whether that's increased flooding, or overland flooding is a lot of what we've been seeing, not as much in these drought years, but certainly is a frequent summertime event due to rainfall amounts. And even in regular winter years where we'll see rain during the winter months on top of frozen ground also leads to flooding and ice and slippery situations, in addition to other activities that were funded as part of that. But as part of our long-range planning process within the region, we're always thinking about this more broadly across all of our infrastructure assets and accessibility, about the vulnerability of the public investments that to impacts of climate change, whether it is freeze-thaw cycles or the inland flooding I was referring to, or even what can happen in drought years when the ground becomes dry and you can get subsidence and other impacts to on-ground investments. It also impacts, you know, our residents' ability to visit. You can have a lot of closures, trail closures, for a variety of reasons. It can be too hot. Through our regional parks visitor study, we're hearing from our visitors that they like to have more shade and more water, and they think that will be increasingly an issue over these years as we get warmer, warmer summers, warmer overnight lows. Those are all really important. In regards to snowmaking, they were a little bit of an El Nino year as well, so I think folks were really surprised at how little snow we had this year. We did have that one lucky event. But certainly snowmaking was always meant to supplement our snow, not to be the only snow. But certainly I'm sure that's what our implementing agencies are thinking of for winter recreation activities going forward, too, is what do we do in these events as we go forward. In experience increasing changes to climate change, especially with warm weather in our winter months, because that's where we're experiencing the most amount of change, is in increasing temperatures in our winter months and increasing overnight low temperatures in our winter months as well. So things aren't freezing as they should, as deeply as they should be freezing. It's definitely on top of mind, part of our long-range planning, but also part of what we'll be bringing into as we continue to work with our partner agencies across the region on how do we address the very real impacts that we're seeing today, but also become resilient to the changes that we see in the future.
Ms. Mattson, you have a comment as well? I think it would be nice to hear from all three systems.
Chair Lilly, representatives, I could actually say what she said, because I think we're all thinking of it that way. The way that we've addressed it, because again, we don't own our facilities or manage them, is to, we recently did an update to our strategic plan that discusses what we expect to see from our applicants and their master plan submittals, and how they're thinking about how climate change is going to affect what it is they're proposing for new developments within these parks or trails that they're building, or the features that they want to add to them. We're asking them to address how climate change could affect those, or what they're thinking about related to that. So where are they building? And we have given out actually grants for snowmaking in several of our facilities, addressing the fact that it's not something we can depend on anymore, but people do depend on their winter recreation. So it's definitely top of mind for us, and our facilities are addressing those issues as we navigate the changing landscape. And just quickly, the state grant, state bonding is not a match for anything that we do. It's an alternative to that. When we give out a grant and there's a match that's a part of it, it needs to be federal or local. State can't match state. Thank you.
Ms. Price.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. Similar to the colleagues here, this is a very serious and real issue for us, so thank you for the question. And at the Department of Natural Resources, there's a couple of ways that we're getting at this. One, as a whole Department of Natural Resources, one DNR, we're part of Minnesota's climate framework that is really trying to work across agencies to think proactively, how do we respond and plan for climate change in Minnesota? Specifically to our group in Parks and Trails, this is very real, as described about the freeze, not as deeply, not as long, thawing earlier, flooding, different things in our shoulder seasons. We're having much longer shoulder seasons now in fall and in spring, where we have demand from visitors in these typical times where we used to be getting things ready. Now people are already showing up and wanting to use the trails and wanting to be in the campgrounds. And so how do we ensure that we're not damaging natural resources? How do we prepare our infrastructure accordingly? We've heard from the Parks and Trails Legacy Advisory Committee that they really want us to think about resiliency in our planning and development. And so we are taking that seriously in anything that we're planning and designing. We're trying to think about how to do it in a way, excuse me, that will be responsive to climate change. It's a very, very real issue. Thank you.
Representative Finke, any follow-up?
I appreciate, thank you, Chair, and to all three, I appreciate that. Everything is going to get more expensive. Hard decisions are going to get made about funding and where we're going to put it and what we're going to prioritize. So I'm glad to hear that you're thinking about it. And then the second question, or it's more just an issue I want to bring up, and it's an idea for us to think this is a long-term project of my involvement in Legacy. But as more and more states become dangerous for my community, for queer people and trans people especially, more people are moving to Minnesota, but people are also vacationing in Minnesota. Trans people are very specific. We have lists, people network together, not just about what states have laws that protect them, but what communities protect them and where they can go when they're in states to feel safe. And one of the things that people do is go to state parks, because state parks generally have a bathroom, for example, that they can use independently of walking in on anyone else. And one of the most dangerous positions many young trans people face. We have communities, right? Like, Ely is known as a welcoming and affirming space, and a lot of people will go to Ely, and then they'll visit the area around it. But there are also entire swaths of our state that I would consider to be dangerous for our community. And you are providing services to our community, whether or not you realize it, by making sure that, facilities are kept up, people can come, knowing that there will be limited amount of traffic and foot traffic, and there will be safe showers, safe bathrooms. And I just want to make sure that we are thinking about that. That's going to be a lasting part of the culture here. Other states are making sure of that. So people are coming here not just for all of the reasons they come here, and one of them is to travel, because we have legal protections, and we want to make sure that when they're in our state protected by the laws, they have access to what we have that is special in Minnesota. So this is just something I want to elevate, and I'm excited to work on into the future. When we talk about accessibility, we talk about residents' ability to actually use the resources. That goes for our community, too, and I'd love to talk more about it. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Representative Cha.
To Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trail Commission, thank you for this brochure. I can always appreciate, publication that we get here in Legacy that is well put together and colorful. Love pictures. I just took a look at this mountain bike trail development PDF file, which I think is fabulous. And I think Representative Heisman might be using it, because I think he's a mountain biker. But, I think that a project like that mountain bike PDF file is so resourceful, right, and so valuable, right? And so that I hope that other agencies can kind of like model what they're doing in their department or in, the work that they do, that they can produce materials like this so that it'd be useful for Minnesotans. And, it was definitely useful for me. Can I ask you, how much did that project cost to put that together?
Ms. Mattson.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. Representative Cha. It cost us out of pocket $40,000, maybe a little bit less than that. Which was the budget that we had initially set for ourselves. We had also originally thought the guide would be about 97 pages in length, and it is 263 or something along those lines. It became its own animal as it was developed. And so we had partnerships from Rock Solid Trail Contracting, who won the RFP. They went above and beyond to make sure it was done when our funds were done. And the International Mountain Bicycling Association, IMBA, also stepped up because they liked what they had seen when we were proofing it and asking them to review sections. So they also put in funding to make that possible. And that was all paid for out of our operating budget dollars, not out of the legacy grant dollars that we have available to us. So that was something we budgeted for within our own operating budget.
I just want to make a comment on that. I was lucky enough to participate in they had a big press conference and presentation on it, and it really is amazing. I'm glad you looked at it. I mean, it's nation-leading and sounds like international even, so that's even more impressive. But there's a huge subculture out there of mountain biking, and I don't know if Heitzman, Representative Heitzman, counts, because his might has a motor in it. It's more like a dirt bike.
With that chair.
It's very fast, actually, I can attest to. Representative Chaw.
No, I really liked it, and I wish that I don't know if we have other similar publications, but you know, we could definitely take a look at doing canoe trails and whatnot in the state of Minnesota, because I think that those are some of the best assets here in Minnesota, is our natural resources. So thank you.
Representative Hurt.
Thank you, Chair Lilly, and thank you for the presentation today. I know I've talked to maybe many of you. I'm a huge outdoor enthusiast. I love seeing all the ski pictures, but we downhill ski. Not a lot to do here downhill skiing, but I just wanted to say thank you for the investment that you've made. When you said that the program that provides like snow pants and hats and gloves, like I led a church, I taught Sunday school for 20 years, and I would bring my kiddos to go skiing, and I kept all of my children's like old hats and gloves and snow pants so that my kiddos could wear them, and I could take all those kids downhill or sledding or skiing with us. And I think that it is really great that then we are formalizing that so that people do have access. And access in the outdoors is actually really important since it's cold here most of the time. And so I just wanted to say thank you for that. And maybe this question is more for, maybe you can just send this information to me, but I know that at one point, maybe a year ago, I might have met with, I can't remember exactly who it was that I met with, but I asked for some specific data about understanding, I think it was Ms. Mattson maybe, about data of like, do we know people coming from outside of those areas to use your particular like parks and trails, and it would still be really great to be able to get that data, because I think that transportation is a barrier, but I think a lot of people are now, especially from my community, are trying to go out into greater Minnesota to utilize like the natural resources, and it would be great to just see like where that information, and I think you were talking about some geo like being able to do that. I don't know if you were able to implement that yet, but it would be really great if you had some data to see some of that. And it's not urgent now, but just maybe we loop back together in the future to get that information. Thank you.
Representative Chaw, do you have an additional?
I do. Thank you, Chair. When we talk about parks and trails, are we talking about golf courses too, like muni courses? That's something else.
I'm seeing a lot of shaking heads. Do you want it on the record? I think the answer is no.
Well, anyways, I just want to piggyback on what Representative Hurst said about the skiing equipment and stuff like that, right? And saying that you guys are not responsible for muni golf courses. I think that what you said is very important for BIPOC communities and beginning families and first-generation families, that when we have programs like the skiing in regards to golfing, there's so many golfing equipment that can be recycled and upcycled to families and stuff like that. And I think that what you're doing with the skiing stuff is great, because accessibility and just equipment costs is a barrier, right? And so I really like that and appreciate that. So thank you.
I don't know if Ramsey County has any. Do you have any startup golf programs, or does Three River System? I mean,
Mark McKay, but I represent Ramsey County Parks Recreation. And
you want to just run down to the mic?
Sorry.
And I don't know if any other jurisdictions like Three Rivers or any have like golfing.
Park board.
Right.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. And representatives, yes, Ramsey County operates 4 golf courses, and as far as programming goes, we offer a number of different youth programs, some of which are partnering with other organizations to operate those, and some of which our staff runs. So from an accessibility standpoint, I think that's still a work in progress, as there are some barriers to entry and cost, but Island Lake Golf Course, as well as Keller Golf Course. We've got opportunities for youth programming and some use of equipment, but that's an area that we need to continue to improve and beef up.
Mr. Rice, sorry, I didn't introduce you. Mr. McCabe, sorry.
Sure. Brian Rice with the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. If I could, to your question, Representative Cha, golf is not considered recreational use as far as the park system goes because it, for whatever reason, it's not, I suppose, because fees are charged and other things. But I will say this. Ms. Barras talked about the World Cup event on cross-country skiing. That was held on a golf course. That was on Theaterworth Par 3. The park board years ago started to reuse the golf courses in the winter, or what was the winter, and turned it into, they're great for cross-country skiing. And really a special thanks to this committee, but also generally the entire state, that World Cup that brought the whole world to Minnesota, or the whole Nordic skiing world to Minnesota, and 20,000 people to watch it, was because of the bonding that the legislature did years ago. You were there, Representative Lilly, with Representative Hausman when you went to Theaterworth Park and went up on the hill and looked around and gave us a couple million dollars that then turned into the infrastructure that went around the Lopet that generated about $6 to $8 million in private fund, that built the building, that had the people, that also got us the snow making equipment that made that possible. And so we do reuse the golf courses there. And Representative Finke's question, that event would have pulled off. I mean, the World Cup would have happened with the snow making equipment that the park board had, that we got from the other partners, Three Rivers and Ramsey County. But it would not have looked anywhere near as good without the snow that fell. It would have looked like you know, kind of spring in Minnesota with all brown and everything, but it was made possible really from what this legislature did through bonding and through all the other support that you've given with Legacy over the years. So if I could I add one thing?
I'd like you to focus a little on free stuff for kids.
Free stuff for kids. Well, and but all
that's our, what we're, yeah, but golf, is Minneapolis system do, Mr. Rice, do they do anything like access to getting young people in? And I've heard from Ramsey County earlier that kids get in under 12 will do things for, you know, no cost. Is that happening in Minneapolis?
Yes, for a golf system, Representative Lee and Representative Chai, yeah, there is a big engagement. We work with First Tee, the PGA's program. Tiger Woods Foundation came here years ago, and yes, the answer is yes. And we have lower rates, and we're always looking to recruit that next generation of golfers. And that's done through our own local resources. That's usually a set aside, and whatever the golf fees we get, some percentage goes to help the younger golfers.
I think we have someone. Thank you, Mr. Rice. Do you have a quick something to offer?
Chair Lilly, I was just going to point out one thing.
Introduce yourself, please.
My name is Emmett Mullen. I'm the regional parks manager at the Metropolitan Council. I work for Lisa over here. And Mr. Rice took most of my thunder, but the golfing is generally viewed as a local activity that local units of government provide. A number of the regional park implementing agencies do manage golf courses, like Mr. McCabe just talked about, Three Rivers Park District, and others. Exactly what he said, though, they make amazing winter recreation areas like Battle Creek or Como, which has golf courses and also great cross-country skiing in the wintertime if we get snow, which is becoming a bigger if. Thanks for your...
Thank you. I think the focus of the question is what we're doing to get young, and the First Tee sounds like a good answer, but we're down to 10 minutes. I have two member questions. If you got something really quick, say it.
Chair Lilly,
Mr. Mullen.
Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board manages a very large local park system, and they provide free programs in all the park areas that have that are adjacent to lower income areas, and they really have prioritized free access, free equipment, free programming for their residents.
Representative Child, thank you.
Yes, I'll make it quick, Chair. We need to rethink about the recreational use of golf parks or golf courses, right? We can go play soccer. We can go play tennis. We can go play basketball for nothing, right? But the only sport that we're paying here for that's creating a barrier is that having golf fees for green fees, right? And so that's a barrier. So I think as a state of Minnesota, as we think about, you know, these parks and recs and we think about golf, we need to think about these public facilities making it affordable for families to access golfing for children under 18. That's all. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Chau. Representative Hurd. Okay. So I just want to mention that Representative Chau is a scratch golfer, raised two college daughters, college golfers. Pretty impressive. Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sorry I outed you on your e-bike.
Well, for a minute, Mr. Chair, I thought we were going to get out of class early, but since we're all talking, let's just burn up every second that we can here. And I do need to set the record straight, Mr. Chairman. Just so people know, because e-bikes, they have a few detractors out there that do like to make the argument that these bikes are very fast. And I have to speak up for the e-bike crowd.
Because it's not fast?
Well, what I'm saying is they are statutorily limited to under 20 miles an hour, which, believe it or not, when you try to go over 20, they actually stop you. So technically, our acoustic bike brethren can go faster than us on an e-bike. And then I also have to put another plug for e-bikes because I do love them. If you aren't a world-class athlete, Mr. Chairman, anybody can participate. It's fantastic. So the standing invitation is always there to anyone on the committee that might not have come up the Cuyuna and enjoyed world-class mountain biking. So there you go, Mr. Chairman.
A good commercial for Greater Minnesota, and there are grants available on e-bikes that are coming out this summer, and they are immensely popular. And so I think we're going to find that grant money goes very fast because they are very, very popular. Thank you for supporting that, Representative Heitzman, a government subsidy.
This is my own pocket, Mr. Chairman.
So I just really want to thank the three groups for coming together, but the work that's done in this space is really important, and it's really treasured by all Minnesotans, you know, to this parks and trails system that we have, and certainly all three of you have been, the teams that you work with have been good stewards, and someone will have to tell me what a vault toilet is. I saw one there. I don't really know what that is. I'll find out offline. I just love all the three different systems, what you're bringing, the ICANN program, the Greater Minnesota, just great work, and certainly the metro area just has incredible things going on as well. But again, I hope you're available for member questions, and again, thank you for member participation today, and thank you all for coming. Thank you. With that, we're adjourned.
Thanks for the opportunity.